Blues women of yesteryear and today. So mark that date on your calendar, Friday, September 20th from 12 midnight to 2 a.m., Tangled Up in Blues, only on WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM. You know it'll be raver dynamic.
The Midnight Ravers, where every show is a special.
And this is radio station WBAI New York. Time is 8 o'clock. Time, once again, for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. On Billy Bones was the best.
Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
Alex.
Good evening.
And Kyle.
Good evening, Lisa. MasterCard and...
What?
Excuse me?
That didn't sound like you, Kyle.
Oh, I'm sorry.
What you got there?
Oh, nothing. I think it's someone impersonating my credit card.
Really?
Yeah.
Amex and Discover Card. We would like to reward you as you have been making your payments on time for the past 6 months or more. We are excited to inform you that you may qualify for 0 to 6% interest on your credit card debt. If you still owe more than $3,000 in your combined credit card debt, press 1 now to avail this offer.
Don't avail the offer, Kyle. It's not worth availing.
I know when my credit card calls me, and that is not my credit card.
You don't have a Discover card, too. I can attest to that.
They name all the credit cards. Everything.
Does anyone still have a Discover card? Does anyone in this room have a Discover card?
Negative.
All right. It didn't take so long to answer that, but nobody.
Not
okay.
That I know of.
Yeah, that's the point. Always been the case. We're back. We're back on the air. Some people might be surprised by that, but you know what? We stated our feelings last week on how we feel about freedom of speech on the airwaves and things like that, and happy to say, not a debate, not something that is debated amongst the people here. So good to know. Good to know that we will continue doing what we have done for decades. And that's basically just telling you about high technology, telling you about the world out there, and not representing anybody except ourselves. And I don't think you'd expect any less.
Absolutely. I couldn't be here last week, but I listened, and everything you guys said, yeah, co-signed.
Cool.
I wasn't confused about it.
Well, I'm glad we're all on the same page.
Yeah.
You know who's not on the same page is Equifax. Remember Equifax, their data breach, and how nasty that was for so many people?
Oh, yeah, and, like, there was a huge settlement for everyone that was a victim to this?
Yeah, you know, we all got emails saying that we were going to get $125 simply by signing onto a class action lawsuit. Turns out nobody's getting $125. In fact, most of us aren't going to get anything. What happened was they sent out, there was a website, actually, that you could go to and basically give them all your information, and they would send you $125. And that just changed. Turned out to be a complete lie. What they say now is that you can only get the $125 if you can prove that you had signed up with their service or an equivalent service at the time. Otherwise, you won't get the $125. Not that you would even get that amount anyway. You'll probably get something like $1.75. But what you can also do is sign up for their service for free for a number of years. And they promise that they won't harangue you for upgrades and extensions when that period is over. Just another scam, just another way that they get away with storing information on us, having it become insecure, having it become compromised, and they just wind up continuing to exist. I don't see how this company is allowed to continue to exist after what they did.
I mean, and think about, remember in the aftermath of the breach, if I recall correctly, there was a massive cyber squatting campaign on their breach notification website that was sending out misinformation. I mean, the whole thing appeared to have been mishandled pretty massively from the outset. And then the fact that they're asking for more of your information in order to sign up.
Well, it's for business. That's what they do.
I know.
They want to continue their business. And 147 million Americans. That's about half of us had our data breached, thanks to them.
Well, it's quite a bit. I mean, this is obviously a massive issue, you know, and it's part of the reason why state legislatures are jumping into action and trying to pass their own privacy laws, because their citizens continually are compromised by this, and state legislatures, I think, are really, you know, beginning to lead the charge here, and hopefully there'll be some measure of accountability for these types of breaches.
Accountability is a funny thing. I mean, imagine any of us in this room getting caught doing something bad, maybe something criminal even. And
yeah, what about it?
Yeah, then just imagine any of us telling the courts or the authorities or whoever, yeah, we'll totally we'll come and serve some jail time maybe in a few years.
No, and you don't do that. That's I just had a conversation about that. No, don't do that.
But like if we promise to, and then we just when the day comes, we just decide not to, and instead like offer them a chance to buy something from us. Everything's even then, right?
You know, that's a pretty good deal, actually.
Yeah, it's a pretty sweet deal.
Wow. So anyway, if you want to find out if you were impacted by the Equifax data breach, we can save you a lot of time and tell you, yeah, you probably were. You can go to this website, eligibility, and you have to know how to spell the words because I'm not going to spell them all out. Eligibility.equifaxbreachsettlement. Okay, and that is, consider that one word. All right, no dots or dashes between that word, Equifax breach settlement. All right, so eligibility.equifaxbreachsettlement.com/EN for English. /eligibility, and you've already spelled that word before. I don't know why they do it twice, but that's what you do, and you basically you have to give them information, of course, which is kind of expected, I guess, if you want to find out something. Your last name, along with the last six digits of your Social Security number. Most ask for four, but because this is really professional, they ask for six. I don't know. But what it'll do is it'll tell you if you are affected or not affected. It doesn't really matter either way if you were affected. Yeah, okay, you're entitled, this is what you're entitled to, supposedly, to either 10 years of free credit monitoring or up to $125 if you decide not to enroll because you already have credit monitoring. So you won't even be eligible for $125 if you don't already have credit monitoring. I don't know why that's a requirement. It doesn't make any sense to me. They're a bit ambiguous regarding the cash payout. In some cases, they refer to $125 specifically. In other cases, they say up to $125. Now, the free credit monitoring includes at least 4 years of free monitoring of your credit report at all three credit bureaus. And, well, there's three of you, so each of you name one. And obviously, we're already talking about one, so whoever says it first, we'll get a free pass.
TRW.
Okay, no, that's completely wrong, because it used to be a name of a company, and I can't believe you didn't name the one we're talking about. How about you, Kyle?
Qualcomm.
Oh, what, is anybody paying attention?
I don't know.
You're in the same room, for God's sake.
Equitrade.
Oh.
Equa. Alex, I don't know.
Alex, save me here.
I was going to say TRW as
Experian?
Well.
We're talking about it right now. The
Experian.
Story
Experian
we're talking about,
yeah.
For God's sake. Thank you. That's all I wanted, the story we're talking about. If I can't get the people in the same room as me to pay attention.
So obvious, I was wondering what you were asking.
It was very obvious, but now there's two others that you guys go, well, you don't have to name it because you were smart enough to name the name that I've been saying over and over again.
Yes. Okay, cool.
You get one guess each, then we have to move on.
I think.
And don't say TRW and don't say Qualcomm, for God's sake.
QVC?
All right, that's it, Carl. You're out.
Okay, can I just make a point? I would like, really, more than hearing about any of this or going to any of their stupid sites, and I'm going
to... You know how to achieve that? By finishing the story, by humoring me and naming two other credit companies so that we become educated and know the credit companies that are monitoring us. Rob?
Well, Alex did say Experian.
All right, and that is one of them. That is one of them. And the other one is TransUnion. So Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion. You were going to say that, right, Kyle?
I was going to say ValueJet, but that's fine. Never mind.
All right. So where was I going with that? Okay, so you get 4 years of free monitoring of that of your credit report. You basically find out if they screw up again. You also find out if people are looking you up, which I guess is important to know if you're applying for a credit card. Of course, you'd expect that, or a mortgage or something like that, or if somebody, you know, in Texas or something, because I'm not going to pick a foreign country, I'll pick a state, is stealing your identity. Yeah, you might find out that way.
What steps have they taken to improve security around either of their companies?
No, you haven't done a damn thing except
you didn't even let me finish that
because I know the answer. But go ahead.
Well, I'm going to go out on a limb that they can't tell us because it's so secret and so secure, and they're doing such a good job and hiring so many contractors.
The fact that they are even in business is a miscarriage of justice.
But you know, the interesting thing here, which would be somewhat ironical too, is if as a result of the Equifax breach, people's personal information was compromised to the extent that it then allowed them to sign up for the breach notification as these breached parties through Equifax, and then through these certain credit
and
monitoring...
forward the mail somehow so that they get the $125 checks themselves.
Well, even more to the point.
Alex, I mean, that's brilliant.
Yes, well, you know, you came up with it.
You are a brilliant legal mind, or in this case, illegal mind, but still, it's, wow, that's great. So basically what you're saying is, we just need to know the last name, hang on, the last name and the last six digits of their SSN, which, you know, I can probably find some connections to that. And then what we have to do is somehow divert the mailing address so that it goes to the PL box, the one that we use, and we just collect the checks.
Isn't that fraud? I mean, can't lawyers...
It technically might be considered
fraud. Well, this is all hypothetical here, think, you know, and, well, the... So, my point, though, was that you could use the personal information of the people that were breached, right, and sign up for these credit reporting, credit monitoring things. Sometimes some of these services will allow you, if you have a certain amount of personal information, if you've verified yourself, to identify the passwords that you've used in the past that may have been breached as well.
Wow.
And so you may be able to recycle those passwords. So these breaches could lead to further breaches, which could lead to further breaches.
Well, I think you're referring to the Yahoo breach, which has over a billion passwords in various places.
Yeah, it's massive.
You can look up.
Yeah. No,
that,
no
was
doubt.
That was a compilation. It was not just Yahoo, I think. I think it's the same.
It is a compilation, you're right.
Yeah, a compilation up to or after that breach.
Yeah, Yahoo played a big part in it. They deserve a lot of credit for that. And it's very handy. It's very handy. You can look up almost anybody and find out what passwords they've used. And, any one of you guys, if you want that information, it's kind of embarrassing sometimes.
Oh, yeah, speaking of embarrassing, because obviously in the aftermath of the Equifax breach, they had this sort of embarrassing issue with domain permutation. Right? So what did they do in response now? Well, they created this extraordinarily long domain name, EquifaxBreachSettlement.com.
Right.
While you were asking us obvious questions, I SSH'd into our server and did a little digging in our office, and I ran a permutation scan on EquifaxBreachSettlement.com and have identified a massive amount
It's like having this robot right here in the studio. You tunneled into SSH, and
exactly.
The lights even flickered for a second.
Yeah, it's WBAI. That's why we need to fundraise.
Uh-huh.
You know, SSHing can decrease the overall power surge.
Get the e-coin over.
Yeah, I mean,
encryption are you using?
It's
very resource intensive.
I didn't use Telnet, I'll put it that way. It's kind of incredible that they're not enforcing and they're not watching the same thing that caused them a massive amount of
money. Right. No, you raise a good point, because EquifaxBreachSettlement.com is a stupid domain name to have when you want people to believe that you're Equifax. Because you could spell settlement with one T or something, and I'll bet you'll get half the traffic from people that didn't type it properly or didn't spell it properly. It's a very easy way to fool people.
Well, I mean, here's one. Equifax brewchsettlement.com, brewchsettlement.com. And, you know, this is such a tricky domain name to spell that it would be obvious, or you could have even one or two permutations of that domain, possibly even three, and it might still be visually confusing to a user. And a really good way to fish for credentials, harvest credentials.
Wow, definitely. And that's just for trying to find out if you were breached in the first place.
See, how difficult would it have been on the organizational end to just make this Equifax.com/something?
Yeah, or like they started, Equifax.com. That would have done it. That would have been enough.
Well, eligibility is a confusing word for a lot of people, especially if you're not a non-native speaker. Uh-huh. You know, eligibility with the G sounding like a J and all, you know, it's tricky. And then to have an eligibility subdomain and then /en/eligibility again?
Well, no, I didn't. I wasn't saying we should have the second eligibility, only the first one.
No, I understand that, but I don't understand why they need the redundancy of an eligibility subdomain and then an eligibility directory, presumably.
Yeah, if we can't get past this part, the domain name, imagine the problems we're going to have with the way they run their whole operation. But anyway, if I could just finish what you're entitled to, because we've yet to get that out. 4 years of free monitoring of your credit report at all three credit bureaus, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion, and $1 million of identity theft insurance, whatever that is, up to 6 more years of free monitoring of your Equifax credit report. I'm not sure when they throw that in. Now, you're also entitled to cash payments of up to $20,000 per person, now we're talking, resulting from the breach, including losses from unauthorized charges to your accounts. The cost of freezing or unfreezing your credit report, the cost of credit monitoring, fees you pay to professionals like an accountant or attorney, loan shark, whatever, other expenses like notary fees or document shipping fees and postage, mileage and phone charges, and additional cash payments for time you spent on the breach. Like if you submitted a claim for 10 hours or less of time you spent, you have to describe the actions you took and the time you spent doing those things. But if you claim more than 10 hours, you have to describe the actions you took and provide documents that show identity theft, fraud, or other misuse of your information. It's a lot of work to go through to get, you know, a measly amount of money they're going to give you, which probably isn't going to be much at all.
You know, and I'm sure that if you read some of the fine print, and I haven't read the fine print on this, so I'm making an assumption here, but all of these awards that they're claiming they're going to give you is $20,000, you know, if there's losses in your bank account, et cetera. I would presume, and I'm probably right, that all of this has to be tied causally to the Equifax breach. So, and that's a very difficult thing for any individual to do, is to prove that I lost money directly as a result of Equifax's negligence. So, and then signing up for these services, too, you have to be extraordinarily careful, because it may limit your ability. Once you sign up for this, it could be what's known in the legal word as an accord and satisfaction. So you may be waiving your right to sue them in court, to bring them into an arbitration, to have and waiving your private right of action to any kind of lawsuit that would otherwise arise from or as a result of the Equifax breach, which could, quite frankly, be much more substantial than a $20,000 payout ceiling that they're offering right now.
Well, what would you recommend people do who feel like they were victimized by this? Should they hold out and sue Equifax on their own, or should they just swallow their pride and get the 6 years of credit monitoring?
I mean, frankly, it's not a bad idea to get this kind of thing. You know, in the wake of the OPM breach, when I received two data breach notifications.
OPM breach?
OPM, or Office of Personnel Management.
Oh.
You know, where
I've,
all of our...
I've misunderstood that story for a while.
Right, yes. I can imagine. You know, we're here to clear things up for you.
No, I learn a lot from every show.
Part of the show, absolutely. I mean, as part of that, I got, several years of credit monitoring, and some of it was actually quite good. I mean, in one of these services that they offered us, we were allowed to see all the sex offenders in our areas, and it would alert you if a sex offender moved into your area.
What does that have to do with your credit report?
It was just, you know, general monitoring. It was something that was tacked onto it. It was really kind of bizarre.
But that's not monitoring your credit report. That's spying on other people.
Yeah. Yeah,
so because you have your credit report monitored, you get to find out where all the sex offenders are?
Well, you can find that out anyway through the National Sex Offender Registry. I think it was just taking data from that and making it more accessible to you and pushing it out to you in an email if a sex offender moved into your area. So you may get some interesting, you know, goods and services like that from this. You know, to bring a private right of action and find an attorney that would be able to do that for you would be, you know, very time-consuming. And most lawyers are not going to take these kinds of cases unless they're class actions. So coming together and bringing a class action could be something very valuable. But again, it's the lawyers that make the money off this, not necessarily the class members.
Well, the one thing available to you is you can freeze your credit reports at all three major bureaus, and that is something that you can do for free, I think, post the breach. You can also unfreeze it yourself, and it's all an automatic process. It takes like 10 minutes, and you can even freeze everything up, and then if you actually want to apply for something, unfreeze it for long enough for that to go through, then freeze it again, and this is something that's already available to you at no charge.
So, wait, when you want to apply for a credit card, you have to unfreeze your credit report so that they can access it to look you up. But when you're not applying for something, it's all just frozen and nobody can see it?
Yeah, it's not that nobody can see it. It's that it's marked frozen in the system so that people can't use it to start something up. Like, say somebody's stolen your information, it won't do them any good in terms of getting a credit card in your name, because if your report's frozen, then you can't apply for that card.
What if they call you and say, hey, I got a great credit card for you to apply for. You just have to unfreeze your account, and then and they go ballistic and steal your identity after all.
Then that's on you.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, be discriminating when it comes to people calling you, offering you credit stuff. But you can freeze and unfreeze your credit report at the three big bureaus.
So those people currently gaining access to the credit reporting agencies, does it flag the people whose accounts are frozen? Because wouldn't that be something to get a list of all the people who froze their accounts? Ooh. Then you get you'd be able to send them mail saying, hey, we know that you're somebody who values their privacy and is rather smart about that, and we have a special offer for you. I think that's a scam that could work.
You always come up with good ideas.
Well, you got to think that way. Yeah. But you know, the thing is, to get back to the Yahoo and the other major breach that spanned over a billion accounts, which is unbelievable. You may have gotten emails, these threatening emails, the Bitcoin ones that say, "Hey, I caught you pleasuring yourself in front of your computer somehow, and somehow I can prove what you were looking at when you were doing that." Release this unless you transfer this amount of Bitcoin to my Bitcoin wallet. And if you don't know how to use Bitcoin, here's a handy guide on how to do that, and they really walk you through it. And sometimes what they do is they tell you your password, and it might freak you out a lot. How do they know my password? That is how they know your password, through that massive database of over a billion users. And if you've ever used a particular password, say to sign up for, I don't know, a AAA account, something kind of useless that you're not going to use for major things, but just kind of, you know, handy to sign in and maybe, you know, get a map or something like that. But you use a throwaway password, hopefully you use a throwaway password, but you might use the same password for everything. And in those cases, you'll see that password in that email, and you'll wonder how they got that. They got it through that massive breach, and you better change your passwords. That's the biggest warning we can give you.
I feel victimized by all the things they're putting people through just to reclaim something that ostensibly they're responsible for, and I'm insulted at the amount of, I guess, what looks like legal aid work they force you to do and to engage in as a part of basically their process, especially if any of the settlement is actually going to their coffers instead of the actual victims of that. And I can't wait till we have social credit monitoring.
Social credit monitoring, that's coming. They have it in China.
It'll be a thrill.
Wow. So what do you have there, Kyle? You've got a interesting...
No, I just wanted to bring this up. I think it's kind of interesting. It might make for some conversation. There's an article in the Times on the iPhone. It's a review. This is pretty common now because, the subtitle is Thinking Differently in the Golden Age of Smartphones by Brian Chen. And basically he's saying instead of every 2 years, if you have an iPhone of... basically around 2015 or 16, it would basically be sufficient. These upgrades aren't really as necessary given the speeds that phones of that generation, particularly 6S and 7 and later. Earlier than that, it might be worthwhile, but I think this is kind of interesting because as we're talking about rare earth materials, coltan and gold, and sustainable or fair sourcing and all of the things that go into these devices, we are kind of living in a golden age. I was wondering what you guys think. Like, it is this this world where, like, we're using all this software, but even a phone that's 3 years old can do pretty much everything and still astounding things with all the sensors and things that come with smartphones. And I was just wondering, do you guys agree? Are we in the golden age?
I just had a question because you mentioned upgrading phones. When you say upgrade, do you mean upgrade or do you mean replace?
Sorry.
Is it a replacement?
No, you raise a good point. This is a really good point. It's a replacement. Because
so you're basically paying $1,000 for a phone again.
You have to buy it anew. And that is an excellent point. We talk about, oh, you're upgrading. Well, you're getting hardware that can be upgraded when the closed software platform decides it will push an upgrade to that device.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's so old and it doesn't work with the current version, in this case iOS, then you actually... you're physically prevented from upgrading because they stopped supporting older
this
models.
This is the problem I've had with Apple since the mid-80s.
Yeah.
You know, you buy something from them, you buy hardware, works great, then it starts getting a little slower, then the software starts changing so that you have to get a new device for the software to work, and they just keep playing that game until you're constantly buying new hardware and new software.
Either hardware features or it's software versions that you depend on,
mm-hmm.
stuff that you would like feature-wise or stuff you rely on software-wise, and all of a sudden the very important business software or graphic software that you need is not supported unless you spend $5,000 or
whatever. I know this is a part of technology growing. And becoming more advanced and faster and things like that. It just seems like with Apple, they really ram it down your throat, and they really push you to keep buying basically the same thing over and over again with a little bit of an increase in speed. And people willingly do this. You go to the the Mac stores, and you just watch for the Apple, whatever they call those places. I'm afraid of them. And people just willingly handing over the cash and just buying the same things over and over again. I don't know. Not my scene.
Yeah, I mean, Apple are pioneers in this field. I think they were the first ones to really, really sell to people devices that they can't readily change their own batteries in. It was in the old iPods and the first iPhones, and now everyone's doing that, where the battery is a sealed item in the device, leaving aside the fact that the battery itself is a consumable item. Batteries degrade over time.
He actually addresses that in the article. He says for those with the younger iPhones, there are ways to get more mileage out of your current device. While the newest iPhones have superb battery life, several hours longer than the last generation, a fresh battery in your existing gadget costs only $50 to $70. That's because there are kind of cottage industries for battery replacement, screen repair, stuff like that, which kind of goes into we've talked about with right to repair.
Yeah, they fought that tooth and nail.
Exactly.
The right for people to repair their own machine.
They actually started really, like as you said, kicking and screaming, started distributing machines that could replace the screens, and they were built by Apple and proprietary, and then slowly they were cajoled into actually providing repair shops, independent shops, somewhat authorized shops, let's say, other than the Apple Store, to repair and compete in that way.
And Apple's not alone in this. Android does it too. I think every manufacturer does this to an extent. It just seems like Apple really pushes it as much as they possibly can. But, you know, in answer to your question, as far as, quote-unquote, upgrading or replacing your phone, for me, I like to hold on to a phone for a while. There are people who replace them every 6 months or every year. And, is it crazy to hold on to a phone for 5 years? It probably is. But, you know, I like my phone. I kind of like my phone. Actually, today it was driving me crazy because we were using Waze to get in here, and all of a sudden it didn't know where we were. It was putting us on side roads and driving through people's lawns and things. I thought it was fun. If I just restarted the program, it worked fine. But, wow, you know, some people would replace their phones over something like that.
Yeah, I can't explain it, so I'm gonna say it's solar flares and gamma radiation or something.
I know I can get 18 cameras in the next model or whatever. I'm happy with what I have. You know, I would like better voice quality. I'd like to be able to hear the person on the other end of the phone, because it is a phone after all. But yeah. I'm just amazed that I can use the internet and basically tie my computer into it and get all kinds of neat features and apps and things like that. And I think people should be encouraged to use these as much as possible, but not constantly be replacing them.
I think so too. And as someone who kind of has been around for the entirety of like the epoch of GSM, I really am sort of used and previous protocols and platforms. I think of it as like, well, when we change the systems, from one type of one protocol or another, from like GSM or CDMA or other technologies, then maybe you kind of have to. And that actually kind of brings me to why right now it might be a good idea to wait, and that's because of something I mentioned at the new year, which is the rollout of 5G. So no sooner do you spend a grand or a lot, shall we say, you get your three cameras for a couple months, and then all of a sudden everyone's moving. And so that, I think, is something to consider as well. Like when the technology itself, the newer antenna and cellular technology, as those generations evolve, it's something to consider because though there is some backwards compatibility, they'll keep existing LTE antenna and so on as a part of the network because not everyone's going to change immediately. You may be enticed by the features and promise of such a change, and that has reigned true throughout. I know there were no color phones before. There were not a lot of color phones, in other words, color screens, until early GSM phones and so on and so forth. So anyway, it's kind of interesting, and I think also that I've not used iPhones. I think it's actually kind of amazing. I've been able to kind of avoid it for so long. As not to say I could figure it out in not too many minutes. But I think the 2 year thing is excessive, especially outside of these cell network generational changes. Because at that point, it is really just fashion. And with everything being so fast, and as you said, the basics of call quality not really having changed as much, although video chat's improved a lot, and those kinds of things are kind of neat evolutions, it is kind of more vanity and fashion than anything.
I mean, you bring up a good point, but on the fashion bit. I think it's actually, you know, almost like a status symbol or, you know, cooler to have an older iPhone that you're still using. I mean, when I see somebody still using an iPhone 5 or an iPhone 6, it's like a conversation piece. And you go, oh, that's amazing. You're still using that thing? It's incredible. You know, issues that I have with my iPhone, and I agree with you, I don't think we should continually replace these things. They're extraordinarily expensive. But the actual hardware seems to be getting cheaper as well. The last two iPhones I've had major issues with the speakers. You know, the speaker phone, and then
when you say cheaper, you don't mean cheaper in price. You mean cheaper in quality.
Cheaper in quality. Okay. That's correct. Yes. Yes. Let me qualify that. Yeah. Indeed. Yeah. But it's we forget that they're phones too. I mean, and the phone function of the iPhone seems to be severely degrading over time. It becomes harder and harder to actually use it as a phone, and easier to snap pictures, consume content, et cetera, et cetera. But I still want to use it primarily as a phone.
I honestly think they get away with that because most people, or not most people, I don't want to make any kind of absolute, but a lot of people use Bluetooth and stuff, so they're not going to, like, they're using their earpiece, or they're syncing it with a car. So when they're actually making a call, they're not even relying on it. I mean, I know what you're saying, like speakerphone and so on and so forth, but they can get away with it because a lot of people aren't using those aspects of the phone even to make phone calls. That's just one thing I thought as you were saying that.
I'm so sick of the whole thing. It's a rat race. I think we are due to jump off.
Yeah, I just, it is fashion, and personally, I have never been into leaving the house with something in my pocket so easy to get lost or stolen that costs that much. I mean, I have a great tradition of buying older phones or, you know, just slipped out of fashion phones that I can get for comparatively cheap, but that still do the job that I want it to.
But yet, somehow, we've all been convinced to get these massively expensive devices, and almost everybody has one in their pockets. And I just wonder how they managed to do that. How they, I guess, because everybody else is doing it. Everybody else has one. And in order to be able to communicate and survive and be accepted, you absolutely have to have one of these things, or all kinds of conditions where you have to have a cell phone, or you simply can't participate in various activities. But really, you know, do people really need these devices?
I think also people make a lot of sacrifices so that they can make that purchase. In other words, not just like selling kidneys and stuff. I'm sure there's a lot of that, and plasma and all those valuables.
Don't laugh. There's people doing that.
I'm not really joking. But I think that people have, they make calculations like, well, I'll use this as my computer, or I'll use this as my broadband. And there are real arguments with the features and ability to do things like make hotspots and so on. You could use it as your connection to internet and rationalize maybe
and
the expense.
That's great, but to be convinced, you have to do it again in 2 years.
Oh yeah, and I think you're absolutely, that upgrading word is so misleading. It's not an upgrade. I mean, you are absolutely replacing it. So that's something that I think should change, or at least be more. Less disingenuous.
I think if you have one, you should be able to trade it in for like maybe 60% of the price, if not more. And they get recycled, and you're not just cash. What do you guys do with your old phones? I save all of mine. I have the old Ericsson phones from the OmniPoint days in the 1990s. I want to turn one of those on and see if I can still get a signal. I have Qualcomms. I've got all kinds of a whole box full of cell phones. I can't throw them away. It's sentimental reasons.
I donate mine to the Trump campaign.
Hopefully at a high velocity.
Yeah.
Again, as per WBI policy, that is my opinion and my opinion alone.
There are projects like OpenBTS and basically very low-power cellular. I guess they're kind of like an antenna, or you can basically set up. It's a base station software package that I believe runs in Linux, and you can essentially run that, although I'm not sure what the power ratings are exactly and what you're able to do, but I think as far as in a lab or on a test bench, you might be able to get one of those to maybe receive an SMS from one of these open source base station projects. Just putting that out there, if anyone's interested in tinkering with old phones, there's still antennas, they can still receive. So it might be a cool way to learn those older protocols.
There are also ways you can donate older phones to things like shelters, women's shelters, where they just need something that you can dial an emergency number on, and don't necessarily need any other service hooked up. So old phones are still useful for that.
Yeah, and if you have any more details on that, places people can donate phones, please write to us, oth@2600.com. We at Off the Hook are fascinated in hearing about these things. Also, we'll be taking some phone calls in a little bit if you want to join the conversation, 212-209-2877. But here's some news about another data breach, since we're on the subject of data breaches. The personal records of most of Ecuador's population, including children, has been left exposed online due to a misconfigured database. This story comes from ZDNet. The database and Elasticsearch server, whatever that is.
Oh, Elasticsearch is an Apache project to basically, it's a search engine, an open source search engine package that you can run for, instead of using like Google or another provider for your site.
I guess it didn't work out for them this time. Discovered a couple of weeks ago by VPN mentor security researchers Noam Rotem and Ran Lokar, who shared their findings with ZDNet, and they all worked together to analyze the leaking data, verify its authenticity, and contact the server owner to tell them to turn it off or something. 20.8 million user records, number larger than the country's total population count. I don't know how they managed that exactly, but okay, the bigger number comes from duplicate records or older entries containing the data of deceased persons. So even if you're dead, you're not safe from having your data stolen. Oh, my God. So, yeah, it's not limited to the United States, obviously.
Now, this is a particularly interesting data breach as well, because it raises the question of who and why was responsible for this data. It wasn't belonging to the government of Ecuador. It was belonging to a private entity that seemed to be operating akin to something like a credit reporting agency, or something that was collecting a lot of financial data and cross-referencing it with other data like car ownership, locations, children, real estate, et cetera. And so it seems like this was some kind of database or some kind of massive amount of data that was being correlated on the population of Ecuador, probably to be sold to advertisers. So, I mean, this should be a cautionary tale, you know, just sort of like, you know, the planet Venus is a cautionary tale when it comes to global warming and greenhouse gases and things like that, right? I mean, it's just massive pressure cooker. I mean, this is what could happen, you know, if we do not hold companies to account when it comes to best practices for information security, being good stewards of our data, and allowing us access to know what it is the hell they're actually doing with this data. So, I mean, having these opaque systems operated by these third parties, you know, it's a big problem. This demonstrates it very clearly.
All right, we're going to see who's on the telephone. Good evening, you're on Off the Hook.
Hi. I had a question I thought you might know the answer to that's been on my mind.
It's possible.
About cell phones. You were mentioning, in fact, that they use rare earths. And people will buy one, and then they'll buy another, and then they'll buy another, and then maybe the screen gets cracked, and they'll buy another. Is this really something that's sustainable, especially when we consider that we're in a trade war with China, and China makes this sort of thing and we don't?
No, it's not. There's a lot of noise from companies as far as corporate responsibility and their sustainability policies, and they want to greenwash or pay a lot of lip service to appearing that way. But you're absolutely right. These life cycle issues, it may work for software in tech. Pixels and bits are recyclable to a certain degree, but when you are talking about hardware, it often ends up in, let's say, countries in Asia or, you know, places that take e-waste, and the way that the minerals and things within the device are extracted can often lead to toxic materials, solders, and other elements in the phone and in the PCB and the boards and stuff in it. It's that are of the device and a part of all those rare earth stuff. So if you're trying to get gold, you might have to get through a bunch of really toxic stuff, and that can affect people that really don't have an alternative as far as sifting through and trying to find value in that e-waste. So absolutely, it's a really big problem. So by not upgrading, you can, or paying to have a screen fixed, you can actually mitigate some of that waste.
Do you think that cell phones will stop being used because they're not sustainable in the long run?
That's a really good question.
Yeah. With the current mentality, I wouldn't bet on it.
We as a species are very bad at taking a long view when it comes to things that make us that make our lives a little easier, a little more convenient.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, Apple or like the industry itself just dropped a billion or millions of these cameras and transceivers and antennas and batteries, and it's just all over the world now. So we're still grappling, I think, to a degree with how to use them, like ethically or in polite company. You know, what is the etiquette of using such a device, or what is the impact of having cameras, and what is the appropriate age for someone to begin to use or learn about one of these devices, and all of these implications are at hand. And the physical space that they're taking up, and the scavenging the earth to just continually build more and more of them. No, it's a real problem, and I think that we need to think about the manufacturers and this kind of age-old term, planned obsolescence. That's something that's been around for a long time, and it is still a huge, huge problem, both in tech but in all kinds of manufacturing and in our sort of disposable lifestyle or culture, consumer culture. So going forward, I think those companies will make strides as far as sourcing things ethically and creating devices that are perhaps easier to recycle, but plans to create things that are modular or that you can take apart and add something to upgrade it, they don't always fit the economies of scale when you're trying to mass produce something, and so a lot of manufacturers are averse to designing things to be upgradable or modular, so you end up just sort of replacing, as we've been discussing.
Yeah, the term planned obsolescence brings to mind, I don't know if I've mentioned this before, this classic New Yorker cartoon where someone's in line at a repair shop, I think for a TV or a radio or something like that, and a repairman is saying to the consumer, you fix it by buying a new one. And that's pretty much what the mentality is.
That's not to say that material science might not, you know, may push us to a place where these devices are non-toxic and perhaps they can dissolve in water. No, that would be bad, right? So there's these material science problems that, like, okay, it's great, it biodegrades, but if it biodegrades in your pocket while you're using it, that's not going to work.
It sounds like socialism.
Yeah.
All right. Does that answer your questions, caller?
No.
Okay,
I'm wondering, I myself don't use cell phones, and you were mentioning before that many people think they're absolutely necessary, but what happens when the materials needed to make them run out, or China won't give us what we want to buy?
Well, we see quite clearly what will happen. You know, you just have to watch any episode of Star Wars where you see people salvaging and trying to recycle these types of things. And I think it's important to remember that any kind of practice over time will become unsustainable, no matter what it is.
I think to answer quickly, we'll find other places to source those materials, or tech manufacturers will have an increasingly contentious role in sourcing these from places that are maybe, let's say, not so ethical in the labor practices and other things that are required to actually get those materials into the manufacturing production floor.
Anyway, thanks for that phone call. We're going to move on to another one. Good evening. You are on Off the Hook. Go ahead.
Oh, good evening, gentlemen. Barry from the People's Republic of Syosset calling.
Wow.
When I heard you guys talk about the iPhone 5, respecting it, I've got an iPhone 4 that I'm talking on right now.
Oh, you sound pretty good.
Thank you. I'm on 3G. If you want
3G,
to know.
3G,
wow. All the way to 3.
I remember 3. You know, my phone occasionally just says G. I think I'm on 1G before they started numbering them. But
That stands for gangster.
Yeah, but 3G, respect. Wow. Yeah.
I know. I'm definitely worthy of veneration. But the problem is I do all my own maintenance, and I used to go to the G Club in Garden City. So I'm from the ancient days. But I'm going to be unsupported by you-know-who on my 3G network. So is it time to put the iPhone 4 to sleep? I'm on operating system 7.1.2. It's the maximum I can do. What do you think I should do as far as they're not going to support 3G, I understand, after 2020. So am I up the creek without a paddle or something?
Yeah, you pretty much are, because unless you want to figure out something else to do with that, like if you can still connect to the Wi-Fi, you can use it over VoIP services, Skype or Google Talk or things like that, but it will not be useful for connecting to the phone network anymore, and you could take a landline telephone that was made 100 years ago and attach it to a working landline socket, if you can find one these days, and it will still work, because the voltages and everything, the protocols, were the same.
Are they discontinuing 3G, period? Is everybody discontinuing that, or just these new phones won't communicate on 3G?
From what I heard is they're not supporting the 3G network anymore, and they're doing the rolling out the 5G here.
But what if you're in a part of the world that only has 3G? I've been in many parts of the world where, like I said, G, 2G, 3G is the only thing they have.
I don't know what to do, because nobody else seems to be on 3G except me here.
That's why you sound so good.
So I think it's the handset and the baseband chip in the device versus the network. So if you have a device that's 4G or LTE or 5G and you're in a place that only supports 3G, you will still have success on that network given it's GSM. And maybe it goes to 3 and no further, but your device will be able to compensate for that. But if the network itself is now 5 and LTE, and they're saying, hey, we're not going to go so far back, That will kind of go right along with generational changes from other protocols like TDMA and the 2G and earlier versions. Well, so that is the case that those baseband chips are going to be phased out, and you should be making some kind of plan, even though your device works this well. And the only other way would be to create a base station, as I mentioned earlier, and on the experimental level
it's
after that.
Like Rob was saying, you buy or you have a landline, it still works. When you buy a phone, it should work as long as you have that phone. They can't just change the rules and say, oh, you have to get a new phone now. Or, you know, if they're going to change those rules, replace the phone for nothing, because they're the ones that decided to change the technology.
Yeah, and also consider they're saying one thing, but technically, is that something they could really functionally get away with in a very, very large metropolitan area that has a lot of different devices relying on this, whether, you know, and of course it also comes down to frequency allocation and the rollout of 5G. If 5G doesn't really go so well, or it takes longer, or there's regulatory issues or interference issues, and you know, it's not well implemented and a smooth process, they may kind of back off on that kind of language, and you may find an environment that has a lot more support than what they're saying now going into kind of a big marketing run-up, if that makes sense.
Think of what we're talking about here. We're talking about discontinuing 3G. We're using 4G now. That's the current one. We're talking about discontinuing the one that's just the most recent before that. Not 2G, not 1G, or whatever they call that one. It's, you know, you should not be disconnecting things, changing things so soon. It's exactly what we were talking about before.
Yeah, it's like when they changed over from analog to digital broadcast television. And all of a sudden, when they flipped the switch, people's televisions weren't going to work like they had since the advent of television. Mm-hmm. So they had to basically provide people with inexpensive or free converter boxes to hook to their old televisions so they could keep watching TV for a while longer. But, you know, when it comes to an infrastructure like this, eventually someone will throw the big Frankenstein switch that shuts it off, and then your devices that depend on that infrastructure are no longer any use.
I miss the old days of analog TV. I don't want to sound like a Luddite or something, but I just miss being able to what we call DXing, which is listening to long distance or watching long distance TV stations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, picking up, there would be days in summertime, maybe some listeners remember this, but days where the VHF channels 2 through 13 just went completely haywire.
Mm-hmm.
And you weren't getting a very good signal at all from your local channels, but you would get distant channels. So you would, something would come in on channel 3, something would come in on channel 6. I'd pick up Philadelphia, I'd pick up Rhode Island or Boston. I got as far away as Kansas, it was the most amazing thing, though. And UHF, you'd find all kinds of things there as well, and it's just great to explore. These days, it's either there or it's not there, and you don't get long-distance signals like you did before. It's just the magic. The magic somehow isn't there.
I once spent an entire day watching Channel 8 because it happened to be coming in, and I don't know where it was from, but it was like looking into an alternate universe.
Probably WTNH New Haven. I remember the day I discovered that channel.
My conclusory advice to Barry, hold on to your phone as long as you can. Let us know when it stops working. Try to call us back if you can.
Yeah, let us know, but don't call us on that phone.
I know, but you think I should? I don't want to get another iPhone because, you know, I went to the Apple store and I bothered them. I really don't like what they're doing and forcing me to buy. I don't like the inductive charge.
Yeah,
and all
no,
about it.
I would say don't go to the Apple store. Go to a different store that sells different products. Tell them what the Apple store told you and have them tell you what they can do better. And you might be surprised, or you might go back to the Apple store. Either way, good luck to you. Thanks for calling. We're going to take another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead. Speak up. Sounds like long distance.
Hello, this is Ray from New Jersey. I had a question. Isn't there a certain amount of controversy with the radiation with the new 5G protocol that they're going to be pushing out?
Well, there is some talk of that because it's using some very high frequency radio waves. 5G stands for fifth generation. It's not a different band, but they are using different frequencies.
Yeah, it's millimeter wave, I think, is in that part of the spectrum or near that. And the antennas are designed with a phase array antenna design, which allows, I think that's both at the tower and on the device. I'm not 100%, but that's exactly the issue or the contention, that the phase array antenna design, though it allows more directional and more, I guess, features as far as getting a lot of frequencies on there and isolating a lot of devices on one, from one tower and at these very high speeds. There is some question about the very high power compared to 4G. I think it's 20 milliwatts versus one or something. There's some ratio. I don't know. If I had more time and more information about that, I would follow up and be a bit more specific. But that's the general contention. It definitely
should be looked at more, as should all these radiating devices that we hold up to our heads. A lot of people say, oh, there's no danger. We don't really know that because we haven't been doing it long enough to know for sure. I do know socially it's having an effect. Hopefully it's not having an effect health-wise, but you're wise to question these things.
Have you seen?
Okay. Thanks a lot, then.
Thanks for your call.
I was just thinking we should also review. I've been seeing all the cable companies are starting mobile phone companies now, and I'll follow up with that too. There's just interesting stuff going on with telephony now. So, in any event, that was really interesting. I'm glad for the calls we got.
My cable company continues to annoy me. Altice, runs Optimum, who runs Cablevision. I told you about the emergency alerts. Now the emergency alert tests also blank out all your channels. So if you're watching, God forbid, you're watching something live on TV and you're on another side of the room and your hands are full, all of a sudden it'll go blue and say a participant has issued a monthly service test or something like that, and you can't turn it off. Your screen goes blue and the channel disappears, and it's a test. You don't need to have everything go out. But that is their new way of doing things. Doesn't matter what channel you're on, the whole thing just gets completely wiped out for that period of time. So that's my complaint.
Hopefully they get it down at some point, and they're not too distracted by this entrance into telephones. What dawned on them? I just can't. What in that meeting? They're like, okay, we're doing cable, but like, we should be on phones now.
Yeah, we should be doing everything.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Well, we're out of time, and there's so much more we had to talk about too. But this happens. This happens all the time. Hey, you can talk to us though anytime by writing to us oth@2600.com. That's our email address. And, of course, we are on every Wednesday evening from 8 to 9 p.m. here on WBAI, where you hear all kinds of amazing opinions and bits of information and perspectives and things like that. And you're always invited to be a part of that. So thank you for calling. Thank you for being a part of the show. We will see you next week. Oh, interesting news. Negative Land has a new album coming out, our friends at Negative Land. They have a single that's out already that we're going to play. We talked about it on the other radio show, on the other radio station.
Yes.
And this is called More Data. Enjoy.
More data. More truth. All of the data.
And
all of the truth, right?
As more data becomes available, then we can start doing more with it. And as we do more with it, that creates more data. As more data becomes available, then we can start doing more with it. And as we do more with it,
me,
that creates more data.
My algorithmic me. Computational inference. My algorithmic me.
And
who I am.
As more data becomes more data. As we do more with it, we can start doing more with it. That creates more data. Creates more data. As more data becomes more data. As we do more with it, we can start doing more with it. Like we're on the right trajectory that way.
Move the human race forward. There is so much more information that we have not digitized. So much more information that we're about to take advantage of.
These are real lives that we're capturing. It doesn't get more real than this.
So you subtract out the kitten and start to put together a catalog of everything in the world. More data. More with it. More with it. More data.
Me.
More data. More with it. More with it. More data. More data. More with it.
Unreliable.
Data. Data. More data. More with it. More with it. More data.
The medical essence of a human being.
The data is there. It's my data.
You don't get to see what they have.
Ask me for it, and I will deliver.
Me. ecosystem that your bedroom has become.
It knows where you are.
The technology, intimacy, it has recorded your every move, every nod, your every breath.
It has an eye.
More data.
The blanket, the technology, invisibly.
How well I've slept.
Communicates this information to your healthcare provider when needed. Community of objects.
You don't own your data.
No problem to make the technology disappear.
The algorithm of me is slightly off. It's trivial. It's obvious. Maybe just a little bit.
It will happen.
It's obvious. It's trivial.
Yeah.
Maybe just a little bit.
I am going to be an accident.
Maybe just a little bit.
Really unique.
It's all you know it about yourself.
Maybe just a little bit.
Really unique.
A marketplace that trades exclusively in behavioral futures.
Okay, so who cares? What's the deal?
Pretty good chance this is a low-risk person. No chance they're going to commit a violent crime. You know, they may do some shoplifting or maybe some drug possession. The chances are they're going to be fine. So here's another individual. Certain to be arrested for something.
Think we're unique.